I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's October 5th, and we have a lot to talk about. Getting a good night's sleep is often easier said than done. About half the people living with MS experience sleep disorders. And today, Dr. Abby Hughes is joining me to talk about how sleep and lack of sleep affects MS, and she's going to share some specific strategies that you can use to better manage sleep difficulties and get the rest that your mind and body require. Dr. Hughes is a board-certified rehabilitation psychologist and assistant professor in the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine's Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, and she's currently being funded by the National Institutes of Health to study the behavioral management of sleep disturbance in MS. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Abby Hughes, there are a few other things that you should know about. Many experts believe that there's a connection between the Epstein-Barr virus and multiple sclerosis. And they theorize that if you can eliminate the Epstein-Barr virus, you'll also eliminate most multiple sclerosis. Well, that's the theory behind the development of an experimental cell therapy from Atara Biotherapeutics called ATA-188. ATA-188 is comprised of T cells from the immune system that have been collected from healthy donors and then modified to destroy B cells and antibody-producing plasma cells that have been infected with the Epstein-Barr virus. And if you're a longtime listener, ATA-188 may sound familiar to you because we started following the development of this cell therapy 2 years ago when I first interviewed Dr. A.J. Joshi, the chief medical officer at Atara Biotherapeutics, at the ECTRIMS conference in Berlin, Germany. ECTRIMS is an acronym for the European Committee for Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis, and their annual conference is the largest MS research conference in the world. Last year, I reconnected with Dr. Joshi at the virtual ECTRIMS conference, and we were updated on the progress of their Phase 1 clinical trial for ATA-188. And I'm going to do my best to connect with Dr. Joshi once again at this year's virtual ECTRIMS conference, when Atara Biotherapeutics will be presenting further results from their clinical trial. And this year, I expect that there will be even more interest in what investigators are learning about ATA-188, because initial indications are that this treatment can reverse disability and improve exercise capacity in people living with progressive MS. And that's exciting news. What makes it even more exciting is that imaging data suggests that this improvement in disability may be attributed to remyelination. Now, I have to add my standard disclaimer that these results are from a very early stage of this clinical trial, and there's a considerable amount of work ahead. However, these results are worth noting, and all indications are that ATA-188 is a cell therapy worth following as that work continues. I'm sure there will be more details to follow as another virtual version of the ECTRIMS conference gets underway on October 13th. Tolebrutinib is one of a new category of disease-modifying therapies called BTK inhibitors. Last month, investigators reported the results of a Phase 2 clinical trial for this new drug, and in a moment, we'll get an update directly from one of the clinical trial investigators, Dr. Anthony Trabolsi. Tolebrutinib is a potential disease-modifying therapy that's part of a new class of DMTs called BTK inhibitors. And investigators in 40 centers in 10 different countries across Europe and North America recently published the results of a Phase 2b clinical trial that was designed to evaluate the safety and efficacy of tolebrutinib in people living with relapsing remitting MS. Joining me to update us on the results of this clinical trial is study investigator Dr. Anthony Tribolsi. Dr. Tribolsi is a professor and research chair of the MS Society of Canada at University of British Columbia. His research focus is on clinical trial design, the development of practice guidelines for the use of MRI in the management of MS, establishing advanced MRI imaging outcomes in multiple sclerosis, and the treatment of neuromyelitis optica. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Tribolsi.
Hi, thanks, John. Pleasure to be here.
Before we dive into the outcome of this clinical trial, I'm hoping you can help us understand what a BTK inhibitor is and how it works.
Yes, I've been involved in MS for over 20 years, and there's been a wonderful explosion of new therapies for MS. It was it's fantastic. So many, sometimes it's hard to keep them all straight. And when I was approached to join this study, I thought, well, why do we need yet another treatment for multiple sclerosis? And I have to say, I'm so glad I got involved. It's a pill, and it's based on pills that were used for treating blood cancers or lymphomas. And lymphomas are a type of immune cell, similar to the immune cells that are dysfunctional in multiple sclerosis. And it ended up being a very effective treatment for lymphoma. And where this kind of came from to use BTK inhibitors in multiple sclerosis is kind of leveraged off of the latest profound clinical trials with an infusion of an anti-CD20 or ocrelizumab, people may have heard of, that's been one of the most effective treatments for MS. And it targets B lymphocytes. That's a subset of the immune system that seems to be very important in multiple sclerosis. The neat difference with the pill is, one, it's a pill instead of an infusion, so it's easy to take. You don't need a special infusion room. But it doesn't destroy cells. It controls cells. So it blocks some of the messaging in these abnormal lymphocytes to tone them down without suppressing the immune system. So there's less of a chance of seeing perhaps infections or other complications related with managing the immune system. So the BTK inhibitors are essentially a riff of the B cell story, and is looking very promising, both from an efficacy and safety perspective.
It also strikes me as being very timely. We've heard now that there's evidence that people with MS who are on B cell depleting medications are not always getting the full benefit of, for instance, a COVID-19 vaccine. And there is some concern about how protected they are. It sounds as though a BTK inhibitor is going to leave their immune system intact. So perhaps we'll see a better outcome there as well.
Yeah, hopefully. And hopefully someday we'll turn our back on COVID as well. But there will be other infections in the future that will plague us. So knowing that we can control the immune system without putting patients at risk is going to be such a huge thing to do.
Well, this was a 16-week randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial that involved 130 participants in, as I mentioned, 40 different centers in Europe and North America. What was the goal of this trial?
This was what's called a phase two trial, and that's where the ultimate goal really is to determine what is the best dose of the medication. So you tried multiple different strengths that is going to have the greatest impact on multiple sclerosis, preventing new lesions on MRI without causing side effects. And so it was so many neat things about that study. I want to start and cover them all, but I'm just going to cover a couple of highlights. One, it was a very innovative style. The classic phase two study is some people get on a placebo for 6 months. Well, with this innovative design, the maximum amount of time people might have been on a placebo was 4 weeks. And so I thought it was the most patient-friendly study I've ever been involved with, that people aren't being put at risk for being untreated throughout the whole duration of the study. And then within 3 months of being on the medication, we could determine what was the best dose. And in addition, people got to stay on the best dose at the end of the study. And because of all these wonderful elements, and the drug worked, and there were hardly any side effects, only one person out of 120 people dropped out of the study, which I've never seen before in my career in clinical trials. It was just the perfect study in so many ways, a very patient-focused, friendly study that was successful.
Wow. Well, that is the best summary of a clinical trial I could possibly imagine. So congratulations on being able to deliver such good news. That's great. What's next now? What happens to tolebrutinib at this point?
It joins a series of other drugs that are in phase three development. So what a phase two study tells you is it's looking safe and it's looking effective. We need to confirm that in a much larger study called a phase three trial compared to standard of care, so some other MS drug. And those take a lot longer, usually 2 years of being on medication, roughly 5 years from start to finish to get your answer. And so there's multiple phase three studies underway now. But even more exciting, because I know this is going to be very successful for relapsing forms of MS, there's a good chance that this drug might work for progressive forms of MS, which is the big unmet need to try to stop progression, because patients cannot get better if they're getting worse. And so if we could have a drug to stop progression, that would be huge. We've been down this road many a time before with other drugs, with a lot of excitement in the past. So we're hoping that this excitement carries through in those studies, but that's still another five-year timeline to see if that works. Why this drug might work is because it's a small molecule, a pill. It can actually get into the brain without causing any harm and control some of the elements of the immune system that are within the brain that are, we think are causing progression and kind of turn them off, but tone them down so that the brain's a happier environment and less progressive.
Well, Dr. Anthony Trebolsi, thank you for all that you do to improve the lives of people living with MS, for giving us a peek into the future of what a really exciting medication may be on the horizon for people with both relapsing, remitting, and fingers crossed, progressive MS as well. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks, John. And I just want to finish by saying, you know, 20 years went from little hope to massive hope and excitement in the field, and it's just going to get better. It truly will get better for the MS community.
Well, seriously, with research scientists carrying that attitude forward, I have a lot of faith in what you say. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
We've heard from rehabilitation experts and the National MS Society that exercise or lifestyle physical activity is beneficial for all people living with MS at every level of ability. But many people living with more advanced progressive MS often find that the exercise equipment at the local gym presents its own set of accessibility challenges, which serves as another example of how health inequity is often due to a lack of access and opportunity. That's why it's so gratifying to hear that the Planet Fitness chain of gyms has committed to providing inclusive, accessible exercise equipment in Planet Fitness locations throughout the United States. This equipment includes an inclusive dual cable strength machine that allows a person to perform multiple exercises from a seated position, including from a wheelchair. It includes a recumbent cardio machine where movement of the arms can move the legs and vice versa. And in addition, the seat can be completely removed so it can be operated from a wheelchair. It will also include multiple cardio machines like treadmills, bikes, and recumbent bikes, which will also be made more accessible. This equipment will be part of all new Planet Fitness gyms, and it will be added to existing gyms as Planet Fitness franchise owners replace current equipment and as this new accessible commercial-grade equipment is manufactured and finally becomes available. And that is good news. Every month, CanDo MS offers great programs for people living with MS and their care partners. And all the CanDo MS programs in October are focused on staying balanced. Tomorrow, October 6th, there's a webinar on staying well this winter. On October 8th, the topic expands into a jumpstart program on taking care of yourself this winter. On October 13th, there's a coaching session on managing your winter blues. On October 21st, you'll gain some great coping strategies in a jumpstart program about mindfulness, self-awareness, and positive psychology. There are also two-day Take Charge workshops scheduled for October 14th and 15th and October 23rd and 24th. And on October 26th, CanDo MS is offering a coaching session on using mindfulness to manage stress. Mindfulness is an intervention that's been shown to be effective in managing or moderating mood among people living with MS, so I hope you'll take advantage of one or more of these programs. All of the CanDo MS programs are online and available to you at no charge, so you can participate from the comfort and safety of your own home. If you'd like to learn more and sign up for these upcoming workshops and coaching sessions, you can visit cando-ms.org/programs, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. When you're talking about taking care of yourself and staying well, it all sort of begins with sleep. For better or worse, the quality of sleep that you receive at night is going to have a major impact on your well-being in the morning. So you might consider getting enough quality sleep as part of your game plan for living your best life. In a moment, we'll be joined by my guest, Dr. Abby Hughes, to talk about how sleep affects MS and what you can do to ensure you're getting a good night's sleep. Some say that wellness really begins with getting a good night's sleep. But about half the people living with MS experience sleep disorders. Today, we're talking with Dr. Abby Hughes about how sleep affects MS, and we'll gain some strategies to better manage sleep difficulties. Dr. Hughes is a board-certified rehabilitation psychologist and assistant professor in the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine's Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, where her work focuses on individuals with multiple sclerosis and other chronic neurologic conditions. Dr. Hughes is currently being funded by the National Institutes of Health to study the behavioral management of sleep disturbance in MS. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Hughes.
Thank you so much for having me, John. I'm so happy to be here.
When we refer to quality sleep, what does that term mean?
You know, quality sleep really refers to how an individual perceives their own sleep in terms of the amount of sleep that they're getting, how good the sleep is that they're getting, and how well they're functioning in the day as a result of that sleep. So I like to give a range where healthy sleep from a quantity standpoint can really be anywhere from about 6 to 10 hours for the vast majority of human beings. However, quality can really differ depending on the day, depending on what medications you take, how active you've been, how stressed you've been, how you're eating and how what your diet and exercise plans look like. So quality of sleep can differ based on that. And so unfortunately, we don't really have an official metric of what quality of sleep is, other than are you going through your sleep stages the way one would expect, and are you feeling rested upon waking?
Why is quality sleep so important to everyone's overall health? And I guess specifically, what are the benefits of quality sleep for people who are living with MS?
Sure. So in terms of everyone, if we think about sleep, sleep is a essential health behavior. It's something that as human beings, we were evolved to spend about a third of our life asleep. As adults and babies spend much more time in sleep than we do. And so it's obviously something that we needed for survival. And that's why we've kind of evolved to be having as much sleep as we do. Now, in our rapidly evolving world from a technology standpoint and the speed of our modern day society, I think we've come to look at sleep as more of a luxury or something that's nice to have as opposed to something that's an essential, just like breathing. In MS specifically, though, MS can affect sleep in a variety of different ways. At the neurologic level, in looking at how lesions may affect one's ability to fall asleep or stay asleep. And medications for MS or certain types of MS treatments can also interrupt sleep or make one more sleepy throughout the day. So we know that over half of people with MS do experience some difficulty falling or staying asleep, and they may be in at risk for insomnia if they don't meet criteria for insomnia. So it's certainly a very relevant and important topic to be discussing for people with MS and for their support partners.
You've mentioned insomnia. I'm wondering if you can talk about what the common sleep disturbances are that tend to be associated with MS.
Sure. The most common sleep disorders that overlap with MS include insomnia, which is difficulty falling or staying asleep, sleep apnea, which is pauses in breathing during sleep, restless leg syndrome, which is a sensation where It's an uncomfortable sensation in one's limbs that the only way to really get rid of that sensation is to move one's limbs. And obviously that sort of interferes with sleep if you have to keep moving in order to reduce that discomfort. And actually narcolepsy is also very more common in MS compared to the general population. And a lot of that is due to parts of the brain that are important for regulating sleep can be affected in MS depending on where MS lesions occur. And sleep is also affected by things like depression and anxiety, which are also very common in MS. So there's a lot of features of MS that sort of culminate to make sleep disorders like insomnia, like sleep apnea, like restless leg more common in this population.
Lack of quality sleep can actually cause or worsen MS symptoms like fatigue, cognitive dysfunction, and mood swings. And you know, when we talk about sleep and fatigue, it seems a little tricky because you can actually be getting plenty of sleep and still experience MS-related fatigue. On the other hand, if you aren't getting quality sleep, it can contribute to your fatigue. So can you help us understand that better?
You know, it's a lot. It can be confusing at times because if you're sleeping too much, that can contribute to fatigue. And a good example of this is if you've ever taken a nap in the afternoon because you were a little tired or a little sluggish, and you woke up from the nap actually feeling worse. That's often a sign that perhaps you were sleeping too long and your body started to go into a sleep cycle or into deep sleep, but then when you woke up, you weren't quite alert yet. So there are times that sleeping too much can worsen fatigue, and sleeping too little can worsen fatigue as well. There's also a component here that sometimes when we worry too much about sleep, that can not only interfere with sleep, but can interfere with other things too. So I just spent, you know, the first couple minutes talking about how important sleep is and how, you know, how disruptive sleep disturbances can be in MS. But also if we focus too much on catastrophizing or panicking if we don't get enough sleep, well, that's not really helpful either. So it's that striking a balance of trying to get the sleep that we need, but also not panicking if we don't.
People who are experiencing MS-related fatigue often try to limit their energy output, so they cut back on physical activity. Then at the end of the day, they find it challenging to fall asleep. Can this lack of physical activity have an impact on sleep?
It can, depending on the person. There have been some recent clinical trials that have shown that exercise, regular physical activity, can be a really important component of fatigue management. And so if one is not managing their fatigue effectively, or if you're continuing to have fatigue, that may lead to things like taking more naps. And more naps during the day can then lead to difficulty falling asleep at night. There's also an important component that exercise gives us in terms of circadian regulation. Circadian meaning the balance of wakefulness and sleepiness. And exercise can be an important feature of helping regulate that circadian cycle. And so if our circadian rhythm becomes out of balance, then potentially exercise could be a way of helping get that back on track. And at the same time, the timing of exercise is also a really important piece to that. Because if we are exercising too late in the day, particularly if you are exercising within a 3-hour window of bedtime, that can also interfere with sleep because you're getting your heart rate up, you're getting your oxygen levels up, and things that aren't necessarily conducive for sleep, even though exercise in other times of the day is really, really important.
I know that you've analyzed research on sleep disturbances and cognitive dysfunction in MS. What has your research in that field, what's it shown you? What have you learned?
A few years ago, some colleagues and I worked on a data set that had been collected as part of a randomized controlled trial for depression and fatigue in MS. And so the caveat here is these data are based on a specific population of people with MS who were recruited for that initial study. But among this group, they completed surveys or measures of their cognition. So asking, how do you feel like your memory has been? How do you feel like your processing speed is? Do you feel slowed in your thinking? Questions about cognition, and also questions about fatigue and mood. And we generally found that those symptoms do tend to correlate very strongly with one another. So the more likely, if someone meets criteria for depression, they're also more likely to be reporting significant levels of insomnia and significant levels of cognitive difficulties. If we expand that to look at some objective measures of cognition, like tests on cognitive testing results, the results are not quite as strong. And we think that's because a lot of times these cognitive tests were developed for detecting long-term cognitive decline over time. And sleep can be a more fluid process, right? When we don't get a good night's sleep, we feel kind of dull the next day. Even if we take a cognitive test and perform just as well as we always do, we might not feel totally on our game. We also might be using more cognitive energy to put out the same quality of work. So it might be something like if you slept really poorly the night before and you're working, it takes more effort to put out the same quality of work, even though your work looks the same to an outside party. So that's always a balance with research and looking at these kinds of questions. Is these symptoms do correlate with one another, but it doesn't necessarily mean that if we worsen sleep that our objective cognition on a test will be observed.
Can lack of sleep contribute to mood disorders like depression and anxiety?
Absolutely. And not just in MS, but in the general population, we know that chronic sleep disturbance, chronic insomnia, and sleep deprivation can have a whole host of negative mental health effects. We know that for people who have bipolar disorder, going a period of time without good sleep can trigger a manic episode, for example. We also know that if your sleep is highly disrupted, that can interfere with different stages of sleep and might suppress parts of your sleep that are really important for regulating mood. And so we do see depression increase in people who've had more sleep deprivation. So the effects can be on depression. It can also affect things like anxiety. So from a hormone standpoint, sleep is really important for regulating hormones. And depending on your own sensitivity to different fluctuations in that, you might experience more depressed mood symptoms or anxiety symptoms when that is out of balance.
Can you share some things that our listeners can do to put themselves in the best position to get a good night's sleep?
Sure. We are creatures of habit. We are creatures of behavior, and we are so reactive to the environments that we live in, including our sleep environment. And so what I often talk about, sometimes people describe that they're really tired, they're ready for sleep, but then as soon as their head hits the pillow, it's like their eyes pop open and they can't fall asleep. And often that's because over time, their sleep environment has been more associated with being awake instead of being asleep. What I mean by that is if you spend more time in bed awake than asleep, your brain starts to learn that that's okay. And so how do we start to untrain that, or how do we start to optimize a healthy sleep environment and healthy sleep behaviors? Consistency is a big part of that when you're trying to get back on track. So having a consistent bedtime and wake time is a big piece. Having a sleep environment that is comfortable, cool, and dark is also really important. And particularly for people with MS, because of temperature sensitivity, being able to manage temperature control at night during sleep can be a really important piece of that. So those are just some very quick behavioral considerations of how to get sleep more consistent and how to create an optimal environment for sleep. I'll say specifically for MS, another question may be timing of certain medications. People with MS can be on a wide range of different medications, some of which have side effects of sleepiness, some have side effects of being really alert, or maybe they are intended to keep one alert, like some of the stimulant medications for fatigue management. So working with your prescribing doctor to figure out the right timing of those medications while also trying to preserve your sleep is a tricky balance and something that can be an ongoing conversation and experiment to see what works for you.
Well, Dr. Abby Hughes, thanks for all that you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS, and thanks for talking with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's always great to talk to you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society, and you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/214. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. Don't forget to check out my new 8-episode podcast series, The MS Caregiver Conundrum. In this week's episode, we'll meet two women, each of whom is caring for a parent with MS. In one case, that parent is living under the same roof. In the other case, that parent is living about 2,500 miles away, and this caregiver is also living with MS herself. You'll find the MS Caregiver Conundrum at mscaregiverconundrum.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.